get through this is vaccination. This is playing a huge part in who we are, in what we do, how we get our life back on track. Now, thousands more of us will receive a COVID-19 vaccine this week. And good morning to you if you've had yours. One, have you had the second bit? Well, we're going to touch on this in a minute. Don't worry too much if you haven't had your second one or it's been delayed slightly. There is a very good reason for this as well. Mass centres, seven mass centres have opened across England. We've not got one in Liverpool just yet, but I'm sure many of us are wondering when we will get the jab. I'm kind of halfway down the list. The government will publish its vaccine deployment plan. That's going to happen today. And the rollout will involve manufacturers, scientists, storage companies as well, delivery drivers, of course, the medics and volunteers who will jab you in your arm. So how do we get things moving at speed? And what about that second jab that's needed that we'll talk about? Nick Beeching, regular guest with us on Breakfast when we were doing Breakfast, is now Emeritus Professor of Tropical and Infectious Diseases at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. That's one hell of a title, Nick. Welcome to the programme once again. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Congratulations. What does that mean for your work schedule now? Have you got another ball to juggle?
No, it usually means old but still useful, the emeritus bit. That's the way I like to think about it anyway.
Is that what it means? I've always wondered what it means, old but still useful. This feels like a race against time, doesn't it? I think it was Nicola Sturgeon who said this is a sprint now and the virus is ahead, but the vaccine will help us to catch up with this and we will win in the end. Is that fair comment?
Yes, I think it's a fair comment. Unfortunately, the virus is winning at the moment. It's a fairly depressing situation, but it is good that vaccines are being rolled out faster and faster. But it is going to take some weeks. As you said, they've just put the seven big mega vaccination centres are being open now. They're quite a long way from the one in Manchester. And it's difficult for a lot of people to get to them. So we do hope all the other vaccination centres are going to be open very quickly.
How many in total will we have? I mean, the seven at the moment are further north is Newcastle. We've got them in the south and there's one in Manchester. So is it pretty much every major town and city? Is that the aim?
Yes, I think so. I mean, they're talking about 1,200 vaccination sites across the UK, or across England, actually. But, of course, that includes a lot of GP surgeries. But they're using different kinds of places. I don't know the specific plans for Liverpool yet, but I would imagine that large cities like Liverpool will have bigger centres as well as GPs and other walk-in areas.
Mm. A third vaccine now, more coming down the line. I was reading last week about another vaccine, a fourth vaccine from Johnson & Johnson that would, you only need one jab for that one rather than two. Now, I may have misread that, but I don't think I did.
That's what the trial was based on, yes. And, of course, that would be wonderful because if you're talking about vaccinating 60 million people or 30 million people, if you have to double that with a second jab, then that's quite a logistic challenge. Mm. So if that one, when that one comes on stream, that will be a huge advantage, but it's not there yet.
How do the vaccines differ? Will it matter which one you get if somebody says, well, I've had the Pfizer, I've had the Oxford one? Pretty much, you know, they're going to do the same job.
They all seem remarkably effective on the data that have been published. That's the good news. You know, they're all hovering around 90%. And I don't think we should get too tied up with the minutiae about whether one's 95 or 93 or 85. They're all very effective. We don't know if you can mix and match, and that's not propose as a general stream. It does happen with other vaccines for other infections, but the plan is if you have the Pfizer vaccine, then you would have your second dose of the Pfizer vaccine and so on. Mm.
With the vaccine itself, and we'll talk more about the time in between the two jabs in a moment, if I may, but with the vaccine itself, the speed from April last year to where we are now. And I know this has been talked about before, but this is lightning pace. I mean, this really is remarkable to have three vaccines and more coming down the line in less than a year. And that would prompt some people to say, all a little bit quick, this. Have they all been tested right?
Well, first of all, I agree. It is fantastic to speed up a process that, you know, can often take up to 10 years to get to this stage. A lot of that's been done by just removing logistic blocks, not by cutting corners, but just making things much more efficient. And the Oxford vaccine, for example, is building on experience of using the same kind of vaccine principle, but with other infections. So there's quite a lot of experience to get ramped up, but also a huge input of extra cash, to be quite honest, and making things happen.
Yeah, because a lot of the time, as I understand it, is spent fundraising, or getting the funds in place for a vaccine, which could take years. But if the funding's there, obviously that's going to speed it up.
Yes, I think it's both direct funding and also the sort of guarantee of funding being available to purchase afterwards. And that does make a lot of difference. But coming back to your previous question, Tony, I think the important thing is that corners have not been cut in safety assessment. And that's the really crucial thing. The logistic challenges to getting the vaccine made and out have been fantastic. But these vaccines are not released until they've undergone the same safety testing as other vaccines that have taken 10 years to prepare. Obviously, we haven't yet got the experience of immunizing millions and millions of people, and one can never say never, but they have been through rigorous safety testing and have not been released, certainly not in the UK or the US or even in Europe, without all of that being looked at.
Nick, are you okay to stay with us for another few minutes? We're going to take a little break and then we'll come back and I'll talk, if I may, about people being a little bit worried about, oh, you know, I was due to get my second jab and it's going to be 4 or 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 weeks down the line now. I'm going to be okay. And we'll talk about how long it takes for that first jab to kick in. If we can do that next, if you stay right there, and we'll be back with you in a second, Nick. Thank you. BBC Radio Merseyside, good morning. It's 10:27. How he described it earlier on was old but still useful. Professor of Tropical and Infectious Diseases at the School of Tropical Medicine. Thanks for being with us, Nick. I wanted to ask about the jab and the time in between the jab. And I'll give you an example. My mum had a jab before Christmas. She had a second one yesterday. And I was under the impression she was going to get a call to say, hang on a minute, you're going to have to wait for 12 weeks. As it turns out, it didn't happen. But how much protection do we have, Nick, if we just have that one jab and then have to wait for the second one?
Difficult question and very, very contentious, as you know. If you follow the science, you just follow what was done in the trials. In the Pfizer trial, people got their second dose 3 to 4 weeks after the first dose, and that's what the licensing says. And there are different estimates of the effectiveness between 50 or more than that effectiveness after one dose, depending on how you look at the figures. But what Pfizer say quite rightly is that, you know, there's been no study data on how long that protection lasts or how good it is beyond those 21 days. Most people who catch infection after the vaccination, it's usually in the first 10 days before it starts to really juice up your protection against infection. With the Oxford vaccine, a smaller group of people had their second dose more than 6 weeks after the first dose. And that smaller group actually had a better response than people that had a standard sort of three-week roughly response. So with some other infections, actually, if you have a longer gap between the first and second dose, you get a better response. But we just don't have those data yet COVID.
And the reason for this delay is, rather than giving all the first people the second jab while there would be millions of people still waiting for the first, the idea is to get everybody done, pretty much everybody who needs it, done in that vulnerable group first, and then do the second one. So it buys us a bit of time, as I understand it.
Yeah, absolutely right. So if you, let's say, for example, you could protect three quarters of the people for a few months with a single dose, that's going to protect a huge number more people if you give one dose to everybody, rather than trying to give a second dose to half that number of people. And that's a difficult decision. But at the moment, the decision is to try and do that, at least get the first dose into 15 million people by the middle of February. That's the government target.
Yeah, and it's doable. There's a lot of confidence within the government, within the NHS, you know, that is doable. And it's all about supply, though, isn't it? You know, if we have the vaccine, if we got enough, presumably we could do this round the clock. But it's all about demand outstripping supply. Can you see these struggling to get enough vaccine as the months roll into spring and summer?
There may be a struggle. I mean, the Oxford vaccine, they said they could provide large numbers of doses every week. We'll have to hope those promises come through. There certainly isn't enough to go and do the whole population straight away, but I think the planning is realistic up till February, and other manufacturers are ramping up their vaccine production. And the UK is ahead of the game. You know, we have already immunised nearly 2 million people. I don't know the exact figure, which is more than the rest of Europe combined, for example.
Yeah, it's going to be a run and total, almost like the old Blue Peter totaliser, I think, isn't it, starting this week. The government will tell us how many people have been vaccinated on a daily basis. I mean, obviously, I mean, I'm in my mid-50s now, so I'm further down the line, and the younger people are, they'll be, what, towards the end of summer, I should imagine now.
Yes, I think they will. Clearly, they'll focus on the most vulnerable people that are most likely to get sick if they get COVID, and also frontline workers, particularly healthcare workers, because if they're not there in the hospitals or in the surgeries, there's nobody to look after you. So there are the government priorities which are well publicised. And as you say, the totaliser is already there on the BBC website. They have the rather depressing figures of how many people have had it, how many people have unfortunately died. But there's a new thing added to the totals, is how many people have been immunised last week and altogether, which is nice to see, actually.
Indeed. I think we'll continue to call it the totaliser, I think, because it explains it in a really easy way for me to understand. And just looking into to your crystal ball, Nick, I don't know whether you saw Professor Chris Whitty on the BBC this morning, but they did a Q&A, good 20 minutes Q&A with him. And you know, without any shadow of a doubt, he did say, we will get through this, but we need more than ever now, since the start of this pandemic, we need to play our part. We need to stop mixing into households, and we need to, you know, the hands, face, space, more than ever now because of this new strain. But to put a positive aspect on it, he was absolutely sure that we will be through this.
Yeah, I share that, but I also share his advice. And it's really important. I mean, I was out having my daily walk yesterday quite early, I was watching people socializing, in inverted commas, exercising outside, and they were within about 2 feet of each other talking away without wearing any masks. And that is just as dangerous, really, as being in a closed room with somebody. Lots of people still wearing masks, covering just their mouth but not their nose. There's no point wearing a mask at all if you do that. So I think we all have to really take responsibility for ourselves and our friends and our relatives, and really observe the rules strictly. Think about whether you really need to socialise. If you're standing in a queue outside a shop where people are together, well, put a mask on. I think it's going to be tough times for the next month or so, in particular, and we really need to take all the precautions that have been advised. But we'll get through it in the end.
Nick, thanks for being old but useful on the programme today. Very, very good of you for coming on the programme and talking us through that. There's Nick Beeching, regular guest with us since March on BBC Radio Merseyside, now Emeritus Professor of Tropical and Infectious Diseases at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. And we're lucky to have him. Good morning. Look at the time, 23 minutes to